are listening to Tech Reads, interviews with emerging technology thought leaders. Our sponsor is Softech, the premier technology trade association that has been serving northern Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County since 1997. Our mission is to create Softech moments where people connect, explore ideas, and create new business opportunities. Learn more at softec.org.
Hello, this is Brian Schwartz from Tech Reads, the podcast sponsored by Softech. We are a Central Coast, San Luis Obispo-based nonprofit that's been around for over 30 years. Our mission is to create Softech moments, and this allows us to do that. I wanted to also just mention that one of the main thrusts this year is called SIGs, which you may have been seeing things about, special interest groups. And in a way, this is a SIG. It just happens to change every month. But the SIGs are typically topics that people put out there that they want to meet on a regular basis. So think kind of masterminds. There are typically 5 to 10 people. And we're basically capable of hosting 9 per month at office hours, this co-working where we're at. So I would encourage you, if you're listening, to consider submitting a SIG. Really, you just need to be a champion for it. We've got one on just a wide range of topics. We've got one for science fiction authors, one on cybersecurity, one on AI. Tonight, I'm hosting one for Lindsay. It's the coders, the Slo County coders. It's basically a SIG.
Bob? We have a biotechnology one, women's leadership, sales presentations. We're trying to work on one for cryptocurrency CFOs, and we have a couple of CEO groups.
So it's kind of what we found works for Softech now. It's sort of a little bit of a pivot from where we were doing larger scale events. We also have an office in Santa Maria that Bob hosts out of.
Right.
We do the
same thing, different topics for different communities, but it's the same basic process. And SIGs are to adults what classrooms are to students. They are a magnet to bring people together by a subject and then create a community around that subject. So the big one in Santa Maria is cybersecurity, which is now planning its first summit, which is being hosted in partnership with Allen Hancock College. So we expect that August 2nd. And that's what we're trying to do is build communities that can serve the needs of the professional developing through their field.
Anyway, it's been a great start to the year. Here we are in June, but we've been having several of these SIGs. So my co-host today is Blake Beltram. Blake, when I started to read this book, Simone, I just knew he was the right guy. And he has a direct connection with HeartMath, right? So he'll talk a little bit about that, because I know you mentioned that several times in your book. But he and I we've gone to the same yoga studio for 10 years. He is one of the original co-founders of MindBody. And now he's working on some new ventures, but Blake, maybe just a quick intro on yourself for our listeners.
The original co-founder of my, the original,
yes, founder, the original of founder of my, sorry.
The OG.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the topic, and it's something that's been near and dear to my heart for many years. Like you, I started out back and writing and pursuing a career in Hollywood. And my intuition led me to start a tech company, which was MindBody. So I actually veered straight from the Howard Fine Studio on Melrose Avenue in Hollywood into getting hired to create software for a Pilates studio in West Hollywood and Santa Monica. And that led me very much through intuition and through heart to start a technology company. And in the book that I wrote, I talk a lot about that process, because I think it's a really strange story. Most people sit down to create billion-dollar companies, you know, with unicorn dreams. And I was an actor and a writer that actually was pulled through my intuition into it. So I'm a huge fan of the topic. I did interview Deborah Rosman, the president of HeartMath, for a podcast that I did for a while. So, and I bought their monitor, the HeartMath monitor, and so I'm very familiar with HeartMath. And the team and the work there. And it's a topic that's infinitely interesting to me. So I have a lot of questions. I could probably spend 5 hours with you asking you all the questions.
I'll be delighted.
Troy and Courtney joining us online, as well as Bob DeMuscio here in the room with us. So welcome you guys. And we'll give you all an opportunity to chime in and ask Simone some questions. But her book is First Intelligence, Using Science and Spirit of Intuition. I really congratulate you for continuing to beat the drum after what, 10 plus years that this was published?
10 years. Yep. Yep. 10 year anniversary of launch was June 14th. So what is that, 3 days ago?
That's so pretty awesome. I wish we would have nailed that day exactly, but I've been taking lots of notes, making lots of highlights. I've just started to get into the actual 7-step framework that once she introduces you to this concept of intuition in the unified field, then she actually gives you a step-by-step framework of how to tap into your own intuition a little bit more, which is just great because I'm all about practical ways to, you know, I love the esoteric stuff, but does that really have a direct impact on our lives? I mean, it feels good when I read that stuff, you know, like the Alan Watts and all that stuff. But I really like it when an author puts together a framework that you can actually put some of this stuff to the test in the real world. So thank you for doing that. And
you're welcome.
Just in the last 24 hours, the framework's already starting to take effect, but basically the question I was asking it was, how can I carve out more time in my busy, already full day to dedicate to sponsorship outreach for a writer's conference I'm doing? And I'm one of those guys who just tends to put so many things on my calendar and commit myself to everything. I mean, I'm a curious guy and I still have high energy and I just love to sort of start things. Here's the problem I realize is I'm a people pleaser and I really self-sacrifice for the benefit of others to the point where I'm a giver, but I never really understood the concept of receiving. And you have a section in there about like, we are horrible at receiving help from others and sort of just, we feel like we have to give. And I'm kind of a perfect example of that, that I become my own obstacle because I kind of blow right past the receiving side and just shift back into giving. And like when you're putting together a conference, you have to be willing to receive help from other people. But it's also my characteristic of being kind of stingy in the sense that I want to do it all. Like,
yes.
If I can't do it, then it shouldn't be done because it's not going to be done right. The way I see it. So I don't want to even try it. And I'm like, it's time to let that go and just let people own it and just be a receiver. And if it turns out great, great, but it's better than saying no, because I can't do it. It's not going to happen. And I'm talking about like things that people are suggesting for the conference where I'm like, well, I already have a full plate. I'm not going to do that. So I've been closing off the fact that there's been some great ideas. So, you know, that's just one experience where I think when you read this book, you will start to hopefully reflect on how you kind of get in your own way. And I told you, you introduced me to this different point of view or perspective on the unified field, which is very different than the folks at TM would have you understand the unified field, which is essentially when you meditate. And David Lynch introduced me to this right in his book, Catching the Big Fish, where when you meditate and you get into deep meditation, you're essentially tapping into this unified field of consciousness. And that's where he says the great ideas come from. But the way you explain it, if I'm understanding this correctly, and then we'll get into Blake's questions and everyone else's, you're saying that we're actually the unified field, we are in it all the time. We're swimming in it like fish swimming in water. So maybe please, for me, elaborate a little bit about your view of the unified field.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and hi, everyone, live and on the replay. There's nowhere you need to go to get the information. The unified field, in my experience of it, is that it is a field of information that we are literally swimming in. This is why we talk about the science of the intuitive process and the spirit of it. So let's just talk a little bit of the spirit of it. The quantum field is an invisible energetic field. You can't see it. You can't taste it. You can't touch it. You're looking around. You're like, if you were a fish and you were looking around, you'd go, where's the water? It's like that. And so there is a misperception or a misconception that when we're using our intuition, we have to go somewhere to get it. You don't, because there's nowhere that field of information that guides our bodies, that grows our hair, that circulates the planets, there's nowhere that we are ever separate from it. It is infinite in nature. It's available for you at the bottom of the ocean, the highest mountain. It's available for you when you're in a really great mood, and it's available for you when you're on your knees because something's coming apart. It's always available for you. And so the idea of needing to connect is a little bit of a misconception. We're always connected, but are we engaged? That's the query. You're always connected to the information in the field that you need that can support you in building your summit. All of the information that you need is there. But you have to be able to, number one, claim it, know it's there. And number two, know how to engage with it. And that's where the biology, the science of our biological skin suit and all of the 100 trillion intuitive cells start to come online. So just like when you're using your Wi-Fi or your cell phone, there's no wires, right? That information is being carried through the field, and you don't need to plug into it. You don't need to connect to it. You just need to have the correct code, right? So it's the same thing when we're using our intuition. So the quantum field, I'll give you a quick example. When I'm working with law enforcement, and that's where I got my street credibility for intuition, working with law enforcement, looking for missing children, working on cold case files, and that's the story that opens the book, that if I have to set a very strong target, and in a case like that, for me, it's the kid is home. That's the target. The kid is home. You're in the end game. You're in the end result of it. And I know that the quantum field carries every bit of information that I need. Nothing is ever lost within that field. All of that information is there. And if I set my GPS, if I set my antenna to the correct informational code, then for me, then the information starts to show in pictures. But the code, the target, we have to have strong targets. Just like, again, if you're using the GPS in your car and you want to come from San Luis Obispo to LA and you want to come visit me in Los Angeles at the barn, because that's where I'm at all the time. This is rare that I'm in the office, that you'd need to punch in the address. And if you didn't do that, you would never leave the driveway. Right. And then you'd get pissed off. Like, how come I'm not in LA? Well, did you punch in the right address? And then did you hit enter? And that enter is then what activates the system to gather the information from the GPS that gives you what you need. Right. So just like a fish swimming in the ocean, we are connected to the information that we need. We just need to learn how to engage with it appropriately. And that's what I help people do. So when I was working with the police and I went in for a missing kid, I always went in there with the target that the kid is home, the kid is home, the kid is home. And then I would instruct my intuition, show me the kid. So you set your target, you generate coherence. Thank you, heart math, which is the science of peace, the ordered signal. You tell your intuition what you want, and then information follows. And then I would see it in pictures and information, and I would write that down, or I would speak it to the cops, and then I'd say, now go do your job. And they would find the kid, or they would take what I saw in a crime scene and apply it to their investigation. It's not a fun thing looking for missing children. So I'd rather play with entrepreneurs and tech geniuses a la you guys, but you know, it helped me build the muscle and build some pretty strong street cred.
That's good. And I realize for our listeners that we jumped right into a part of the book that if you hadn't read it, you'd be like, what the heck is he talking about? But maybe for people who are just like listening to the preview of this, it'll give them a little taste of what we're going to be talking more about. But, you know, that was my first immediate question I wanted to jump into. And I've got a couple more, but why don't I hand it over to Blake to dive a little bit into some of the thoughts and questions you had.
Thanks, Brian. You Simone, bet. It's so nice to meet you and be here with you. I have a lot of questions for you.
So I got a lot of answers.
I had 10 questions, and I just, as we got started, I had a logical order that I thought that I would dive in, but I'll never get to all 10. So okay. Other than that, then me decide, of the 10 questions numbered 1 through 10, which one does your intuition draw you to?
Number 4.
Number 4. Okay. Interesting. Okay. So number 4 is about alcohol. So the question is, alcohol is such a huge part of our cultural landscape. Thanks to the Huberman Lab podcast, I recently became aware of how even moderate alcohol consumption can have a pretty relevant impact on our physiology, especially over time, as an accumulation over time. So you connect intuition and openness to overall well-being, and you connect that even to our bank accounts, into our financial abundance. So sure. I'm really curious to know your take on alcohol and its relation to our ability to be open and intuitive. And then, you know, is there a connecting point there if we see lack in the rest of our lives?
Faux show. Yes, alcohol. We're our biological antenna, right? We've got 100 trillion intuitive cells all communicating through an energetic environment, taking information from within the body itself, gathering information from the surroundings, and communicating very profoundly and intimately and intricately and precisely with each other. All of these cells are happening to form sort of this massive biological antenna. Alcohol is a depressant. It turns the volume way down on all of those cells. If we want our intuition to be working at a volume scale of 10, which is ideal, you know, you want to be maxed at it. And if you drink alcohol, it's going to turn the volume way down on that. It's going to make it very hard to get the biological antenna aligned. So understanding that we've got all these intuitive cells in every part of our body, and then we've got an intuitive biological system of gut, heart, and head, that alcohol on all three of those levels is going to, I wouldn't say it causes static, because it's not amplifying, it's not creating static, it's depressing the code. So, you know, alcohol, any kind of stimulant, really, you want to be able to do your intuitive work with as clean a vehicle as possible. And listen, that's not to say that you have to stop drinking coffee or stop having a glass of wine. But if you're going to do your intuitive work, you want to be as clean as possible. And what I notice now, when I was an actor in LA, Blake, you could probably relate to this, you know, I waited tables. And in the best restaurants in Los Angeles with the best wine lists frickin' in the world. And before each shift, you know, you would do your wine taste. And I could, you know, I could have a glass of wine, no problem. Now I have a sip and I'm like, I can't do it. My system doesn't allow it, because I'm constantly revving at that more elevated level. Now my body says, no, it will allow me chocolate, which is the next best thing, right? But alcohol is a depressant, so it's going to turn the volume down. That's the simple answer. And it does, it affects your capacity then to use your intuition to shape money, to shape career success, to shape innovation.
So if somebody is struggling a little bit with their career, or, you know, with finances, you might reverse engineer that back to even moderate alcohol consumption, because it's affecting my antenna. It's affecting mm-hmm. my ability to intuit correctly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, maybe I'm not making the best choices and not getting the best results. Is that right?
Yeah. And again, you know, it's interesting, because they'll say oftentimes in spiritual practice that in order to become spiritual, you should only eat or drink certain things. In order to have this higher level of elevation or enlightenment or whatever, that you should only eat certain things. The irony of it is it's actually backwards. When you do start to become more elevated, those things fall away, right? The desire to eat McDonald's or to eat crappy food. Again, chocolate, not on the list. But but the desire for those things dissipates when this antenna gets clearer. So if you are noticing limits, and it may or may not be connected to that, right? But it certainly isn't a benefit. It's certainly not a benefit, because there are a lot of people who have job issues and financial issues and who don't drink. But there's still a dissonance in their intelligence system that they just kind of need to tweak and realign and understand. And But again, just like anything, if you want a clear signal, don't do anything to screw it up.
Yeah. Thank you. I felt that. In fact, I stopped drinking in 3 weeks. It'll be a month.
Yay. And what are you noticing about your intuition?
Stopped again.
In three weeks, it'll be a month. Yeah.
You smarty pants.
Yeah. No, I have noticed a difference literally in a week. And even though I'm somebody who would drink 1 to 2 drinks a night, 2 to 4 times a week, moderate. And it literally wasn't until listening to that Huberman Lab where I realized, oh, wow, this could really be having an impact. And when I stop, even for a week, I do notice a difference. For sure.
Yeah. You want, I do try to avoid speaking in cliches. This is where I think I also excel as a teacher of intuition, is I'm very fluff free, because you can't go into teaching law enforcement and be waving crystals around. Yeah. It's just not going to work. You got to be really rooted. And so, you know, anything you can do to keep the vehicle as pristine as possible or as clean as possible, the better your antenna is going to perform.
Right.
It's so funny. I had a glass of wine with my friend the other day, and I think I took 2 sips. I'm like, holy crap. Like, what am I drinking? I'm so out right now. Yes. It was bananas.
Yeah.
I was looking for the button to raise my hand, but I just raised my hand. Because you can see me.
Speak up. That's a good question.
That's the button.
This is my little... because I'm in my jammies. But I wanted to say that I have a horse, and I care for someone who was a neglected thoroughbred. Now he's getting out all the time. It's so gratifying for me to go out there regularly. But because with safety with horses, you have to have eyes in the back of your head. I do see it as a sort of a spiritual practice of honing all my senses, which include my psychic senses too. And I've read a lot about all that in metaphysics over the years, and eat really well. But I think everything you're saying is so right on. But it's like a joy being out at the ranch, because I leave my phone in the car and I'm hearing the sound of the birds and the horses chewing their hay, and just all the sensory, the smells of their coat and the pack and the hay.
Yep.
There's something about it that I don't ever want to give up, and it is making me a better person in a lot of ways.
For sure. And the smell of manure. I love the smell of manure in the morning. You know, it's like that line from Apocalypse Now. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It's like, no, I love the smell of horse poop in the morning. And only a horse person would understand that. But what's cool about the horses is, you know, their hearts are 5 times larger than a human heart. And if you're Secretariat, that's, you know, you amplify that by another 3. And the electromagnetic field of the heart is what stabilizes and generates a coherence within the field. That's why horses are such powerful helpers with children with autism, or, you know, attention deficit disorder, etc., or even people with trauma. They take them around horses because the coherent field of the horse's heart is so massive, and that then orders our heart, and then we're able to tap into things at a more profound level. And I'm the same way. The horse that I'm working with right now came from a traumatized background, and he weighs 1200 pounds. And when he stands up straight, he's about 9 feet tall. And I'm 5'3" on a good day. And I'm a very teeny little woman. So he outweighs me by 10 times. He's huge. And he could hurt me. So I have to be so present so that I'm aware of what he's sensing and feeling. And you go straight into the heart. And you order that position, and you're aware too of the field around him, what's he sensing, what he's feeling. And so he might twitch, and I'm aware of that. And he's in the field, the horses are in the field, as in the same field that I'm in. And if we can order our heart rhythm, and this happens with people too, that whoever has the most ordered, coherent heart rhythm, this speaks to the heart math stuff, in a room will, dominate's not the right word, it will influence the room. So whoever has the most potent, ordered, coherent, amplified heart rhythm can guide that room into wherever they want it to go. And so it's the same with our horses. And so my horse is training me as well. It's like, how can I match the power of his heart that's, you know, massive? How can I meet it so that he's never a threat to me? Right. And so when you're going into meetings, when you're doing these calls with your other groups, and you're shaping content for your specific groups, the more ordered, the more powerful, the more stable your heart rhythm is, then the more influence you're going to have on that room. And then what's also cool about that is that, again, I said earlier that our intuition is carried in every biological cell, but it's also rooted in our biological systems. And that its most basic gut instinct, and this is the first question I asked the cops when I went in and trained. I had 22 police detectives in a room for 3.5 days. And most of them, with the exception of one, were really excited to be there. And one guy just sort of sat there like, yeah, what's this chick gonna teach me? I've been on the street for 25 years. Look at this girl. She looks like a fairy. You know, she's not gonna be able to teach me nothing. So I thought, okay, I use my intuition. How do I step into this room? And I asked them, I said, how many of you men and women have been on the street on a case and you just knew something wasn't right? Something wasn't safe. Something wasn't true. And every hand in the room went up, even Mr. Shithead in the front row. And I hope it's okay that I speak authentically. You know, and he's reluctantly like, yeah, I'm my mom. And I said, okay, so I'm not here to teach you something. I'm not here to try to convince you. You guys are already doing it. What I'm here to help you do is I'm here to help you understand it. I'm here to help you direct it at will. And I'm here to help you learn how to listen to it. And I said, so I'm not here to try to convince you of anything magic, because you've already agreed with me that it's working. You've already got it. Now we just need to know why it's working, how it's working, and how to amplify it so that you can do what I do. Because I don't want to look for body parts anymore. It's not fun for me.
That's brilliant.
So horses and dogs seem to have a lot of intuition. Seems we lost ours due to society.
Well, and I think that I was thinking about, too, that the tempo of society today and the fact that technology is constantly around us, you can't, it's like you have to leave your phone in the car by accident. Or when I went down to the beach and I left my phone at home, like I had felt this freedom that I hadn't felt in a long time. Because even though you're not on the phone, there's something that it's sort of, your mind is on alert waiting for that text or that phone call. But when they can't reach you, you have sort of this freedom that is very rare in our society today, because we're connected 24/7, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're always looking at a screen, and we sort of miss out on so much. So I wonder how much, just the way our culture is being wired, how we're missing out on our own collective intuition.
Well, there's a bit of a paradox here, because yes, tech is pulling our focus for sure, but the information age, I'm really delighted about the information age, because it's an evolutionary impulse. So think of how a biological system evolves. There's something in the environment that forces that vehicle to evolve. And if there's something massive in the environment, the creatures that evolve quickly are the ones who survive, right? If it's slow, then creatures will tend to evolve more gradually. But here's what's cool. Intuition at its very basis is a survival mechanism. Gut instinct says safe, unsafe, life affirming, life negating, good for me, not good for me. It's a survival thing. Get out or stay, grow or survive, mate or run. It's binary, and it's right or wrong, good or bad, survival, basic gut instinct. Yes and no. At its most evolved, at its highest level, it's an evolutionary tool. It's an innovative tool. So, and then there's, you know, there's layers in between. But here's what's cool about being in the information age right now. In the environment, remember that we're swimming in this soup. of information, right? It's all around us. So in the environment is a 24-second news cycle, ping, 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 right? Constantly. So our biological system is influenced by the energy in the environment. So what the information age is actually doing for us, which just thrills me to pieces because this is, you know, perfect for me as an intuition coach, is that it's the information is actually activating our intuition. It's bumping it up. Because remember, at its most fundamental, it's a survival mechanism. At its highest, it's a thrival intelligence. So the information field is actually amplifying our intuition, because if we don't learn how to use our intuition in the midst of all of this information, what's going to happen? Analysis paralysis, spikes in mental illness, depression, you name it. So our intuition is coming online to help us surf that data wave instead of being pummeled by it. So I'm delighted. You have to know, you have to understand and see the benefit of it. But that's why so many people are talking about intuition now, because the information is kicking the hell out of us. And the only way we're going to be able to access any really meaningful intelligence is to be able to use the intuition that rises us above all of that freaking chatter. And putting the phone away is certainly a good way to do it.
Well, and knowing that peace is always right there, right? Peace is a constant that we get so easily distracted and pulled away, and sometimes so far from it, we're like, well, wait a minute, just close your eyes and take a deep breath and peace is back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just speaking for myself, but
yeah.
Let's talk about heart math, because you just touched on it like maybe four or five times in the book. You talk about it, but you don't explain what it is. And we have someone here who knows them intimately well. So why don't you guys share a little bit about what that organization is?
Yeah, I mean, HeartMath was started, gosh, by a guy named Doc Childress, I think, about 25 years ago or something like that. And the basic premise of it is that there's a brain that's located in our heart, and that our heart puts out an electromagnetic signal that's many times greater than our brain. And so that there's actually a heart brain. They claim that some of the decisions that are made are actually made by the heart, and that information is sent to the brain. We tend to think that the brain makes all of the decisions and then sends that information to the heart, but they say some of that is backwards. And then they're really big on coherence, which Simone's mentioned a number of times. And coherence is, they've been able to map it. So it's basically, if you were to look at your heart rhythm on a scale, and Simone might be able to articulate this better than I can, but that when your heart is in coherence, that it hits a certain rhythm that you can actually pick up through the electromagnetic waves. And further, that emanates about 8 to 10 feet outside of our body. And there's suspicion that it actually goes further than that, that there's probably, it's not local, probably like quantum entanglement. So probably there's a coherence or lack thereof, even between us here and you in Los Angeles. But as close as you and I are, they would say that our hearts are literally interacting with each other. So if you could monitor both of our hearts together, you would be able to measure whether or not you and I are in coherence or out of coherence. So the way I think of this is, you're standing in line at Starbucks and you feel some creepy feeling behind you, and you turn around and sure enough, there's a person there that you just get a really weird vibe from, and you don't understand why, but you felt it before you even turned around. So HeartMath would say that there's some lack of coherence that you're picking up on from that person's heart. Mm-hmm. What was that, Simone? Was that pretty accurate?
Gold star. Well done. Yes. Yeah. And I came to know about HeartMath through a women's philanthropy group that I was involved with here in Los Angeles many years before I ever sort of came out of the closet as an intuition teacher. And in talking to this one woman, Sheva Carr, you might know her. She, you know, she was talking about HeartMath, and I'm like, well, that's what I do when I'm working with the police. It's all about coherence. And if I'm incoherent, then the intuition doesn't work. And again, it goes back to what we were talking earlier about the horses. You know, powerful heart fields create amplitudes, they create wave patterns, like throwing a pebble into a pond. And then where one of those rings of pebbles in a pond meets another group of rings in the pebbles in a pond, where those two things meet, they create an interference pattern, which creates another new signal. And so when people are interacting heart to heart, you can have a very profound intuitive conversation when you're using your heart intuition. It's a heart to heart conversation. And, you know, we talked about gut instinct as the sort of the initial level of intuition, but then there's the heart level of intuition, and that is rooted in, so gut rooted in survival, heart rooted in connection, communication, compassion. And so that if you're intuitively having a conversation with somebody, it's said that you're having a heart to heart conversation. If you're having a heart to heart conversation with your teams, your groups, and your business, or you're working on trying to solve a problem within a corporate structure or whatever, and you're aligned in a coherent field, then the amplitude, so let's talk science again, the amplitude of that wave function grows really, really, really big. And if you've got a really potent amplitude on a wave function, it's going to touch more spots in the field that are full of information that you need. So when you're working in groups, this is why I like to work with groups, is we get them all, number one, targeted on the same thing, and then we get that heart function amplified. And you, it would blow your socks off to see how innovative a coherent group becomes. Yeah. Whereas, you know, 20 minutes before, they're like, this is dumb. We're never going to find the solution. Like, okay, let's just tweak a little bit. Let's set the target really clear. Let's get coherent. And then they're like, boom, boom, the ideas that come through their intuitive nature. I'm getting goose pimples. Oh, and this speaks to the idea of why, if you bump into somebody who's giving you the heebie-jeebies, why do you get goose pimples on your skin, or why does the hair on your neck stand up? Because, here's some more science, when you're in the embryonic stages, there's cells in your body that they split. Some of them go off to create the nervous system, and the other cells go off to create the skin. So we're literally covered in brain. This is an interface that when you bump into something incoherent, or conversely, profoundly coherent, you'll get goose pimples, right? And so when you hear truth, or when you're having a really deep conversation with somebody, you'll get the goose pimples because your body is recognizing coherence, order, truth, harmony, or the creep behind you, it's recognizing, don't stand too close, right? So that heart piece is so important. And that's where we start. That's where we build the foundation, is on that coherent signal. The coherence is the scientific word. The peace is the spiritual word for it. But it's where you have to begin the intuitive conversation, or you're going to be hooped. It's not going to work.
Good stuff.
Thank you. Years and years of professional training.
Let's jump into just a couple of the practical pieces in your book, because I sent you these questions in advance. So what are the four levels of intuition?
So I touched on two of them. We got gut instinct, survival, heart intuition, connection, communication, compassion. Then the third one is the brain, visionary power. That's the capacity to see visionary things, to have ideas. Innovation is rooted in the brain, right? It helps. It's the capacity to see things, right? That's the brain. And then there's the more of the universal one, the thing, the intuition that connects you to everything, the divine universal intuition, if you will, the voice of God, if you want to call it, the voice of source, the field, the matrix, the force. Call it Frank if you want to. It doesn't matter. It's that universal field of intuition that connects you to everything. And so that's why I said earlier, the basic one is fundamental survival. And then the ultimate one is sort of this universal intelligence. And here's the cool thing. We've all got all of them working at the same time. They're all active. So, because I've never met anybody who doesn't have a head, a heart, and a gut, not once, not one time. So they're all active. It's just learning how to recognize the language that they speak. And then being able to, if you're wanting to solve a problem or come up with a solution in a business, or you're wanting to innovate in a certain way, how do I get all of those things in me lined up and working towards the target? And then how do I hear it? How do I pay attention? How does it show up?
You have more questions.
Oh, yes. Nine more. Would you like to pick the next one?
Seven.
Seven. Okay. Oh, this is interesting. I just took a note on this. I really love that you use the term fluff-free quite a bit. And the note that I took down for myself was spiritual phonies. Because I've been immersed in the spiritual field for a long time, and I've had experiences myself that a lot of people just would not believe if I told them. So I know for a fact experientially that there's much more, to this universe than meets the eye. What's interesting to me about that as well is that quantum physicists believe the same thing because they can measure quantum entanglement, but they can't explain it. They can do the double slit experiment, but they can't explain it. So the smartest physicists in the world sort of agree with or align with the smartest, or the most spiritual people in the world, I guess you could say. And at the same time, I've experienced myself a lot of people that I sort of put in this category of spiritual phonies. You know, maybe it's me. Maybe this is my ego, or I'm being judgmental. I don't know. But I've encountered so many people that seem to embrace this whole notion of they're a spiritual person, they're channeling Isis and, all of these different things. And then when it comes down to just being a practical, good human being, end up being sometimes people that are kind of mean and just not nice people or not good people. And it's disconcerting because then I wonder, like, what part of me, what part of my intuition was not picking up on that. So anyway, I just wonder if you have a thought on, since you use fluff free a lot and you base your teachings in science and neuroscience, do you have any thought on how we're impacted by people that are maybe spiritual phonies, or do you see that part of the movement as well?
Well, I think it's just like any industry, right? You've got people who are, they're talking philosophy. There's a difference between philosophy and wisdom. Philosophy, there's a lot of armchair spirit people out there. They've read a book, they've taken a workshop, and then they're enlightened, and that's fine. But until it is embodied, until there's what I call field work, until you've been out there and you've been walking the talk and you've applied the science and you've been doing the work, where it's not, where you don't have to be fluffy about it, right? I'm trying to think, Tom Brady, football player. I'm not a big football fan, but he's the one who's popping into my head right now. He knows how to throw a pretty good football. He can throw that ball and hit any guy running at 100 miles an hour down the field. He's good at it. He doesn't think about it. But he does it in a really potent way. He's very fluff-free about how he does it or how Tiger Woods hits a ball. Their power has moved from, here's how it works. There's levels of integration. We go novice, initiate, master, virtuoso. There's a learning curve, and it is when you start hitting mastery and virtuosity, you better put your frickin' seatbelt on because the G forces are going to blow your hair back. It's novice, initiate, master, virtuoso. When you're moving from initiate into master, you are going to be so frickin' tested that you're going to have to know how to walk the spiritual talk, or you're never going to move beyond novice and initiate. And so what you'll tend to notice is that even though there's lots of people out there teaching spiritual concepts, they're still at the initiate level. They haven't been put through the meat grinder that's going to move them into mastery and virtuosity. And so if you've been put through the meat grinder, and I have several times, that I had to be able to walk the talk. What am I teaching? And every time I go and find a missing kid, oh, you better be walking your talk. There's no fluff allowed there. You can't. So what I tend to notice is that a lot of folks who are coming forward are sort of still at that master, or sorry, the novice initiate level, which is fine. But when you move into mastery and virtuosity, that's when the fluff comes off. And it just is what it is. And no, I can throw that frickin' football. Give me the target and I'll hit it. No fluff. Just let me hit it.
Yeah,
So I think that's what you're feeling.
I
I
love
think.
that. Can I follow up to that
Please.
real quick? Because that's amazing. And it leads into another question I had, which is I think it's Eckhart Tolle's quote. that the spirituality is the ego's favorite hiding place. And so I have a feeling that when one is trying to move from initiate to master, that there's a battle with the ego that's taking place on there.
And hardcore. Like,
how does one sort of overcome that to get, you know, those G-forces where your ego starts saying, well, I'm this or I'm that, which can lead to judgment and meanness. And I think some of the things that I've seen, because I don't, so maybe it's a both and with the people that I've encountered. They're not either or.
No.
But somehow their ego has gotten a grip on them. So,
and it'll. I always say that when you're moving from initiate into mastery, I always say brace yourself. So because you're going to hit so much resistance at that level, it's like Chuck Yeager breaking the sound barrier in the late 40s. You know, I like using Chuck as a very powerful metaphysical teacher, because when he was breaking the sound barrier, 752, Mach 1 is 752 miles per hour. And there were six pilots who died before Chuck did in the attempt to break the sound barrier. They'd get to it. They'd get to that where they were getting ready to break Mach 1, and the instrumentation, the plane would just like, it would start to come apart. There was so much resistance at that threshold of the sound barrier that the pilots before Chuck, when they got there and they're in that frickin' turbulence, they would pull back on the throttle and the jets would explode. So they all died. Chuck shows up and he's like, well, you know, this could go one of two ways. And definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So intuitively, I'm going to make a different choice. So he gets to the threshold. The jet hits 752 miles an hour. The same stuff happens. The screws are shaken. The instrumentation is failing. And he's like, fuck it. I'm just going to give it the gas, all of it, throttle full. And he blows. I'm getting goose pimples again. And he blows through the sound barrier. He breaks through that resistant level and, you know, makes history. And then several weeks later, he breaks Mach 2. And so it took forever. It took forever. It took forever to break the sound barrier. He breaks the sound barrier, and then look what happens. They break Mach 2, Mach 3. And so that was an intuitive thing, saying, I've got to push this more. I've got to move through the resistance. I've got to put my big boy pants on and just frickin' give it in order to break through that resistance. And so it's the same thing when you're moving from the limits of self, ego, and you're getting ready to do this, there's going to be so much turbulence in the system because the self is coming apart.
How does that picture? Are we talking about losses? Are we talking about failures? Are we talking, what does that look like in real life?
Relationships come apart. The way you used to do business doesn't work anymore. The food you like to eat doesn't make you happy. Again, unless it's chocolate. You know, how you do anything anymore doesn't work. One of my clients, when I first started working with him, he was doing $40 million a year in business. He has an education company. $40 million is a good nut. He wanted to do $1 billion a year. No, that's not accurate. He wanted to build a $1 billion company. That's accurate. I want to be mindful of the precision of language. Precision is important. He wanted to build a $1 billion company. I said, okay, we can do that. So in 3 years, we moved him from $40 million to $200 million. There was turbulence in there. The systems that built a $40 million company weren't sustainable for a $100 million company or a $200 million company, and they won't work in a $1 billion company either. Those systems are going to come apart as you move. And so we have to be able to use our intuition to understand, okay, the fact that stuff is coming apart doesn't mean I'm doing anything wrong.
Wow.
It means I'm up-leveling into mastery and intuition. The systems that feed a $40 million business aren't going to feed a $1 billion business. Ask Jeff Bezos. The systems in his garage when he built Amazon wouldn't work for what he's got now. And stuff came apart. Stuff failed. Steve Jobs, look at what happened to him at Apple. He got the boot, right? But what did that lead to? So there's a misperception that says if you're doing everything correctly spiritually, that it's all going to be fluffy bunnies and unicorns, and it's not. You're going to hit some turbulence along the way. And if I may, intuition will show up in three ways. It's elegant, meaning it's just like the GPS in your car. It's going to be very direct and very simple. It's efficient. It's going to help you save energy, and it's expansive, meaning it's going to encourage you to grow. It's going to encourage you to move out of your comfort zone. When you're moving into expansion, this is really important. When you're moving into expansion, the stuff that was elegant and efficient that used to work for you isn't going to work anymore. It's going to come apart. So you're going to be in the expansive mode where you're in that turbulence and shit's going to come apart. Trust that it's coming apart to serve. Remember, intuition, survival, thrival. It's going to come apart to serve that higher level of thriving. And you just kind of have to freaking put your seatbelt on and endure the G-forces until you pop through it. And then you'll move back into elegance and efficiency. But your intuition will be working at this level, not at this one, right? If you go back to the analogy of a jet, when a jet is closer to the ground moving through the atmosphere, it uses way more fuel to fly down here. But you pop it up here where the atmosphere is much lower and you're moving at faster speeds, you're using less fuel. That's what you want your intuition to be able to help you do. So it's stuff coming apart. When stuff comes apart for my for my clients, I'm like, cool, it's working. Don't lose your shit. Just maintain the target, maintain the target, order your coherence, hold that focus. Stuff's gonna come apart. It has to.
Well, and there's very few very successful entrepreneurs that haven't had their share of serious setbacks and failures and financial hardships but they, like you said, they come into the next venture with sort of this new intuitive muscle and understanding. And maybe just the fact that you lived to tell.
Yes.
You know you will make it again, like it didn't kill you. I think the thing about living longer and taking bigger risks is that, well, I'm still here. And,
yes.
And it really tests your relationships and the people who I think are going to stand by you, and people are going to fall away because they're not able to grow with you. I think I see a lot of that. One of my clients talks about the tall poppy syndrome, and it's really just the discomfort that this new version of you is, they're no longer coherent with, maybe, and they want to sort of bring you back down to their level.
Yeah.
And even just like the gossip that they may have had with you in the past, if you're no longer having that gossip conversation, have you noticed like there's an immediate shift where like, what's wrong with you? You know, why aren't you getting into this with me about what's going on in the world? And you're like, you know, I'm done. And maybe it's time to move on. I do think relationships run their course, right?
We
evolve beyond the same people we have. Actually, it's happened with me. And it's hard and confusing when you're going through it. Because you're like, is there something wrong with me? Am I doing something wrong? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, my tribe is no longer, you know, these people that used to love me are not supporting me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Again, novice, initiate, master, virtuoso. The analogy of the caterpillar and the butterfly. The caterpillar doesn't hang around with the caterpillars anymore. The caterpillar doesn't eat the same food that it used to eat. It doesn't hang out in the same places it used to hang out. It's a completely different structure.
Okay. So we are getting at the end of our hour.
Mm-hmm. Time flies.
And we haven't been kicked out of this room before, but I think it's going to happen. Simone, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about, because I didn't really give you a chance to do an introduction and talk about your courses and your book, just a real brief, if people want to dive deeper into this, because you've been so generous by giving us a whole hour of your time. And I know you charge for your time normally, so we've been really, really lucky. But how can people tap into your teachings?
Well, first of all, pick up a copy of my book, First Intelligence, Using the Science and Spirit of Intuition. This is the actress in me telling you how to buy my book. Available on Amazon and fine booksellers everywhere. That's the first way to do it. Thank you very much. And then, you know, my website is simonewright.com. And all of my programs are there. The First Intelligence for Intuition, sorry, the First Intelligence for Entrepreneurs program is on there. The masterclass specifically for intuition for entrepreneurs is on there. And then there's a sort of a little primer, a smaller introduction is on there. And I do one-on-one coaching and I do group coaching like I did with the cops. I'll go into a company and we'll do this for a day and just, you know, bring everybody into their intuitive wheelhouse. And so there's ways to work with me one-on-one, in groups. You know, I go and I speak at events. So there's all sorts of stuff on my website. And then my YouTube channel is Modern Mystics with SimoneWright.com. A bunch of intuition videos on there. I'm not big on social media. Part of the reason is because I don't like having my face in the screen. I'd rather be out at the barn. And, you know, what I think I'm really good at, like you said earlier, is keeping things fluff-free. And when you understand that we are all intuitive, this isn't a superpower that some people have and other people don't. We're all born with it. Children are profoundly intuitive. It's trained out of us. It's a language. It's the why I call it first intelligence, is because it's the intelligence we have before we know anything. And but when we're mature, we can direct that intelligence in ways that help us innovate and improve health and well-being and all that other stuff. And so what I think I really excel at, what I help people do, is recognize how inherently natural it is as a skill, as a language. It's not magic. It's not voodoo. It's not woo-woo. It's not supernatural. It's not paranormal. It's you. And when we learn how to master that, then we can surf this into it, this information data tsunami that's here, and we can steer our lives, our business, our health in any direction we want. And I think that's what I'm really, really good at. And that's what I help people do. And you can find all that stuff on my website. Awesome. And you can email me if you have questions. I'm delighted to answer questions if you have them on email, and you can reach out.
Thank you, Simone. Any other closing comments, Bob?
Nope.
You've been very quiet, but this is, he didn't read the book. Normally, Bob gets an opportunity to get an advanced copy, but thank you for coming up, visit with us and listening to Simone.
Interesting conversation.
Yeah, she's not our average typical guest, but I'm glad we found you.
That's good. I don't like being
binary twice.
I only mentioned what?
Binary
yeah. Twice. But the
it's a coding reference, not a gender reference.
No. Well, but here's what's cool about binary as it relates to code. Intuition is a code language. It's total code. You give the computer the target. You enter the code, and the computer shapes what you see on the screen. It's all code.
Yeah.
So intuition is code. So this is a language, Bob, that you can probably speak very fluently through your computer tech understanding, because it's all code.
Binary was my first language.
It's just language.
Can I speak in a quick closing question and ask for maybe a 30-second answer? I think this
sure.
might be a great closer. Yes. In your conclusion, you say fewer than 5% of the people who say they want to change for the better, or who say they want greater happiness, better health, or more joy, actually do what is required to achieve it. Only 5%. What, in three words or less, makes the 5%?
They're not sissies. You can't be a sissy and live an intuitive life, because it's going to scare the shit out of you, because you don't have any valid data. You're trusting something that is unseen and unknown and non-local, and you have to have your big kid pants on to do that. And not everybody is that brave. Don't be a sissy.
Thank you for listening to Tech Reads, sponsored by Softech. If you enjoyed today's show, please subscribe and share it with your colleagues. If you have comments, questions, or want to suggest an author for a future episode, visit Softech at softec.org and click on the Tech Reads link.